Welcome to the Humble Hoof Podcast. My name is Alicia Harlov. This is a podcast for both horse owners and hoof care professionals, offering discussions into various philosophies on the health of the hoof and soundness of your horse. Please check us out on Facebook or at thehumblehoof.com. If you've listened to this podcast for any amount of time, you probably know that I got into hoof care because of my navicular diagnosed gelding, Vinny. You may be wondering, what is navicular? Well, in the past, navicular was considered a disease of the navicular bone in the hoof, which sits the back half of the hoof. And it was thought that if you had navicular bone changes on radiographs, the horse might have a degenerative disease, which would cause pain and lameness and eventually cause the horse to be retired or euthanized. That diagnosis sent me on an absolute rabbit hole. And I did what most people do when they have a situation that they don't know what to deal with. And I went to Google. One of the first places I found was Rockley Farm in England. And I saw instances where horses were diagnosed with navicular disease and given a poor prognosis. And they went back to work. As I went through a checklist to grow healthier hooves for Vinny and get him more comfortable, I came across a blog post by Dr. David Ramey called The Persistence of Memory, or What Do You Mean I Don't Have to Give My Horse Isoxaprine for His Navicular? This post was what I was looking for to get hope for a navicular diagnosis, and it's what I've referenced countless times since I first found it, probably almost 10 years ago. It's been shared continuously in my navicular Facebook group, and it's something that I reference often. So when I was at the AAEP convention in December 2025, and I saw that Dr. David Ramey had a booth, and it just happened to be right next to the booth for the hoof care organization I'm a part of, Progressive Hoof Care Practitioners, I knew I had to meet him, chat with him, and ask if he would be in the podcast to talk about navicular. Dr. Ramey was super gracious in lending me his time to chat about this diagnosis and what it means for these horses. So why don't we start and you can tell us a little bit about your journey into veterinary medicine and how you became interested in navicular.
Well, my journey into veterinary medicine is just a journey of love. I had an opportunity to work around them. I rode horses when I was a little boy, but I had an opportunity to work around them one summer, and I decided to completely change my career path just because I wanted to be around horses. And so I, of course, got into veterinary school. And at the time, as now, navicular disease was, you know, a commonly discussed topic. And so it became sort of inevitable that I would have to learn about navicular disease and deal with it from a clinical standpoint. But as I dealt with it in a clinical standpoint, it also became pretty quickly clear that a lot of what we thought we knew just didn't seem to add up with the clinical presentation. And so that then spurred my interest into really following, doing some research and investigation on my own. And it's been quite an interesting journey and quite instructive as to how medicine in general progresses.
Yeah. And I think, you know, we talked a little bit about this at AAEP in December, where, you know, navicular became a passion of mine because I had a horse that was diagnosed with navicular, and your blog post about it, I think it was called The Persistence of Memory, was something that I was one of the first things I found when I was Googling navicular and trying to figure out what it all meant for my own horse, and sort of sent me into my own little rabbit hole. So, I mean, I could talk about that forever, and I know my listeners have heard about that a lot. So that's not, I don't want to talk about me, but I wanted to ask you a little bit about some of those things that I found through reading your blog. So can you tell us a little bit about the past, you know, traditional approach to a navicular diagnosis and why it might be flawed in some cases?
Well, there's no question that some horses do develop disease of the navicular bone. And so the question is not whether horses get navicular disease, but are we able to properly diagnose it? Now, the trap that we, and I, you know, using we talking about veterinarians, fell into was thinking that this was a relatively straightforward diagnosis. Way back in the 1970s, it was postulated that horses with heel pain got heel pain because of a defect or somehow lack of circulation in the area. And so there were articles published about horses getting warfarin, which is actually rat poison. It's an anticoagulant that keeps blood from clotting. And horses got this medication, and it was really quite a pain because, you know, once you start interfering with their ability to clot their blood, then you have to follow their coagulation times. But the fact is that some horses appeared to get better after they would started on this medication, which brings up one of the real bugaboos that we deal with in medicine, which is the idea that just because one thing comes after the other, the second thing caused the first thing. So initially, we had this idea that, you know, the horses had pain in the navicular bone, and you gave them an anticoagulant, and many of them would get better. The way that we made the diagnosis was we shot anesthetic in the back of the foot, and we thought we were being very precise by putting that anesthetic over nerves that went right to the navicular bone. And so the combination of seeing a lame horse, putting anesthetic over the nerves, and then taking x-rays of the navicular bone, which when we determined that they didn't look like they should, meant that the horse had navicular disease, led to actually a fairly and disturbingly easy diagnosis and treatment plan that was followed for, oh goodness, a good 15, 20 years. Things got tricky after that. It really started kind of a flurry of investigation, because whereas we had a relatively easy diagnosis, which we'd see a horse in pain, and then we could eliminate the pain by putting anesthetic over the nerves going to the heels, and then we take x-rays, and if we determined the x-rays weren't quote-unquote ideal, we could make a diagnosis of navicular disease. And then we had an anticoagulant to give because it was supposed to be from a circulatory problem. It was relatively straightforward, but then we started looking deeper, as we in medicine often do, and found out there were just a whole lot of holes in this theory. Now, I will mention, because warfarin was such a pain to deal with, people came up with the idea that they would give isoxaparin to horses, and that idea came out in the early 1980s, and there was even a study showing that horses that had been diagnosed with navicular disease get better when they were on isoxaparin. And so people would sell dozens and dozens of bottles of isoxaparin for a variety of things, for the circulation of the foot. But I digress. I think the first thing we started to realize was that x-rays of the navicular bone are not really diagnostic for navicular disease. I mean, in severe cases, they can be. But we used to talk all the time about what were described loosely as changes in the navicular bone. That is to say, we had an appearance that we thought was normal, and we would take x-rays and we'd say, well, that doesn't agree with our perceptions of what normal is, therefore it's abnormal, therefore the horse has navicular disease. But starting in the 1980s with surveys in Europe, and then even a study that I presented in the early 1990s, it became pretty quickly clear that there's a whole variety of appearances of the navicular bone that can be considered within the range of normal. And one of the things that I routinely tell people is that normal is not a thing, it's sort of a space. I use the example of people being either pigeon-toed or standing out with their toes or being straight. None of those people are limping. Their feet are in different positions. They're all normal within a range of normal. Navicular bones are like that too. Some of them can have little holes in them, more or less. And in the absence of any lameness or signs of pain, they're pretty well meaningless. Nonetheless, people persist in describing horses as perhaps being pre-navicular, but there's no basis for such a diagnosis. At any rate, by the time the 1990s came around, it was pretty clear that just taking x-rays of a horse's navicular bone can really tell us anything in the absence of any clinical information. Well, things got, a little murkier yet when we started to understand that the anesthetic that we're putting in the horse's foot was not nearly as precise as we would have liked it to be. So whereas people talked about putting anesthetic directly over the nerves and then blocking out the navicular bone, it turns out, as anybody who's studied anatomy should understand, that there's a lot more in the horse's foot than the navicular bone. And putting anesthetic over nerves that are going down to the foot has the potential, and in reality it does, it has the potential to block out, and it actually blocks out way more than the navicular bone. We couldn't see any of that in the early 1990s, but I started clinically to see horses that would block out. They would have x-rays of a certain, they'd look a certain way. They'd be on medicine, and then, but within a few months, the horses would be better, which kind of goes against the idea that the nerve block just absolutely specifically targeted the navicular bone. There had to be something else going on. The third thing was that not too long after that, we started investigating isoxaparin and found that it's actually not well absorbed by the horse, and most of it that is absorbed is removed very quickly. So even if it did have a therapeutic effect, isoxaparin probably can't work. Then you throw that on to postmortem studies that were done down at Texas A&M showing that navicular disease is not a circulatory problem. The fact that we kind of could determine that a horse had pain coming from its foot, but other than that, you really weren't sure what was going on. But a lot of those horses would get better. Nonetheless, ideas changed slowly, so a lot of people still persisted with ideas of pre-navicular x-rays to tell you if your horse was going to develop navicular disease or spurious diagnoses based on poor diagnostic criteria. And things went along sort of murkily until we came up with MRI. And MRI has shown us that, well, there's a whole bunch of stuff that can go wrong in the foot. So what we have now is, at least in my own practice, is a situation where I very rarely make a diagnosis of navicular disease. Certainly horses get foot problems quite regularly, but I think it's super important for the horse community to understand that you shouldn't rush into a diagnosis of navicular disease because, number one, it's not as common as we formerly believed. Number two, if a horse genuinely does have navicular disease, it's usually a pretty bad diagnosis. And third, since most of them don't, if you're patient, a lot of those horses get better anyway.
Yeah, and I'll say, I mean, I have most of the horses that come to my property have a navicular diagnosis, and most of them, I mean, knock on wood, they do pretty well with a very basic approach to just getting them to move in a healthier way and getting stronger feet. But I will say that, you know, I have a navicular Facebook group that has been, it's you know, coming on 11 years old, and we have tens of thousands of members in there. And a lot of them still have horses that are on isoxaparin or that got diagnosed just from radiographs, or some that were diagnosed without even radiographs. You know, I've had people that join the group and say, oh, my vet says my horse has navicular and, you know, they don't have any radiographs. It's just that they blocked to the caudal hoof. And it's interesting to me because you mentioned that in the 90s that it was fairly known that radiographs were not maybe the best way to diagnosis. Is that something that maybe is just not as public knowledge as it should be in terms of this being more of an intricate or more involved diagnosis as opposed to one that's just looking at the navicular bone?
I have a hard time explaining it. There is one of my favorite sayings is by a writer for the Baltimore Sun in the late 19th century named H.L. Mencken. And he said, for every complex problem, there is a solution that is simple, easy, and wrong. and navicular is like that, because the navicular bone is in a very complex area of anatomy where there are tendons and ligaments, there are joints in there. There are a whole bunch of structures, all of which can be injured and affected. And if one jumps on a diagnosis of navicular disease, one essentially ignores all the other potential problems that could be in there. And when you're working in medicine and making a diagnosis, you want to try to keep your possibilities open as long as possible, unless you can absolutely say for sure that you know what you got. And that's why when I hear stories like yours about, you know, horses being diagnosed as navicular based on having a heel block, or horses being diagnosed as navicular without x-rays, it makes me wonder too, because certainly we've come a long way as a veterinary community where we should know better than that. But it goes back to Mencken. You have an area where things are very complex, and people like easy solutions, doctors like easy diagnoses and treatments, and saying, listen, guys, this is really not something that we should just jump into. It makes it more complicated and more difficult. And people just don't like that, I think. They like being able to just have an answer.
Yeah.
James Herriot, the English veterinarian who wrote the All Creatures Great and Small series of books in the 1970s, was told by his employer that it doesn't matter what the animal has, just make sure you call it something, because people want to give it a name. And so if you give, you know, the horse with lameness that you can eliminate by putting anesthetic in its foot, and it's not just, you know, you said caudal foot, it's been shown that the heel block can take out the joint of the foot itself, the coffin joint, in some horses. So it becomes really complex. But I think people like being able to say, oh, your horse has this, you need to do this. It makes it a sad and unfortunate diagnosis. It's kind of an easy diagnosis to sort of conceptualize and understand. And I just, you know, it's just, but it's not right. It's not right because, unfortunately, I think it takes away from people the idea that maybe their horse can get better. It takes away, you know, people saying, well, I'd like to buy this nice horse. And somebody says, well, based on the x-rays, he might develop navicular disease in the future. I mean, it takes away a lot of the opportunity to own good horses, I guess, is the best way to say it.
Yeah.
We don't know as much as we think. It's much more complex than we thought it was 30 years ago. But the word still hasn't gotten out nearly as widely as I think it needs to get out.
Right. And so my next question might be a little bit of a tricky one to answer, but given what we know now, and in terms of like all that you're saying about diagnosis and radiographs, how much stock should we put into a horse that, or into navicular bone changes on a sound horse? Like, if, you know, so many, like a pre-purchase exam right now is like the standard. It's now become the thing that we all do. I didn't do pre-purchase exams when I got my first horse, but, you know, it's now like, you rarely do people buy a horse without one. And if a horse is sound and moving well and they have navicular bone changes, is that something that should pause or should that affect a purchase, or how much, you know, weight should we put into those?
Not much. We don't have information that suggests that a certain characteristic of the navicular bone indicates that there will be lameness at some point in the future. If you ride your horse enough, you can pretty much guarantee at some point in the future it's going to be lame. But that's just because, you know, they're doing athletic activities and they can be hurt. But the idea that in taking pre-purchase examinations of the navicular bone, we can somehow predict how that horse is going to do down the road is just a fallacy. But, you know, when people get into doing pre-purchase exams, there are liability questions and that come up, and people don't want to be on the hook for a bad decision. So it's a lot easier to turn a good horse down and go look for another one than it is to take the quote unquote chance that this horse might have a problem down the road.
Yeah. And so I guess it's another difficult question in the sense of, I know that you can't answer this with 100% certainty, but so when we see those navicular changes on radiographs, and some of them I'm sure are actual changes or damage, does that necessarily equate to pain?
No. I mean, if it's a point of pain, the horse is going to be limping.
Right. And so I'm sorry, let me rephrase that. So like if we have a horse that's lame,
Well, I think what you're trying to say, if you have a horse that's lame and he has navicular changes, what do you do then?
Yes.
Well,
yeah.
And the answer is wait. Because, you know, as a former really good client of mine, you say, when you take x-rays of a horse at a point in time and you call them changes, they're changes from what? Because you never had x-rays to see how the horse looked before. So how do you know they're changes from anything? How do you know, how come, why aren't those just normal for that horse?
Right.
You know, a fractured bone is a change from normal, but we all know the great difference between a normal, you know, x-ray of your shin bone and a broken x-ray of your shin bone. Those are two completely different things. But navicular bone x-rays aren't like that. They're not that easy. And so, you know, if you see a horse that is lame and you can identify the lameness being in the foot and you take x-rays and you see that the navicular bones don't look like the picture perfect textbook x-ray, the only thing that you can say based on that exam is that the horse is lame somewhere in the foot. You don't know that that x-ray is anything other than that horse's normal x-ray, unless there's some sort of a severe abnormality they can see.
Yeah. I mean, so that's another question I had kind of bouncing off of this, is that outside of like looking at a bipartite or tripartite navicular bone, is there anything you see on a navicular bone radiograph where you're like, oh, that's bad, that definitely hurts?
Yeah, you can see like cysts in a navicular bone. Sometimes you can see the bone changing and like spurring. And so when you see secondary changes, you can be pretty confident that those are significant. But if you don't see those changes, if you don't see those secondary changes, it's pretty tough to hang your hat on anything.
Yeah. So in terms of, you know, you're talking about if you have a horse that has lameness that blocks the foot, the, you know, basically what you can say with certainty is that pain is coming from the foot.
Right.
What issues might be diagnosed as navicular disease that are actually something else?
Well, the big thing that we've come to understand since the advent of MRI is how many soft tissue injuries occur in the foot. So the deep flexor tendon, for example, comes down the back of the leg, turns over the navicular bone, and inserts into the bottom of the coffin bone. That's a real high stress point. And it can have little tears can occur down there, much as if it were in the upper leg, it would be something that we might refer to as a bowed tendon. It's an area that's very difficult to image without MRI. But if an injury to it, that deep flexor tendon occurs down there, they'll block out with a heel block. They'll look fine. And eventually they'll heal. There are the impar ligament in the navicular bone attaches the base of the navicular bone to the coffin bone. There are suspensory ligaments of the navicular bone. Even the joint of the foot, the coffin joint, gets back around that area. And inflammation in the coffin joint can extend into the tissues surrounding the navicular bone. So there's a whole bunch of different tissues that can get injured down in the foot, and all of them will block out to anesthetic injected over the nerves that go down the back of the pastern. But the prognosis for a soft tissue injury, a ligament injury or a tendon injury, is much different than if you have deterioration of the navicular bone, which is essentially a very sad diagnosis, because it means the horse isn't going to get better.
Right. Yeah. And I can't tell you how many times I've had clients and I've had members in my Facebook group. I've had horses here on the property where the owners had thought that they were destined for retirement or euthanasia. And, you know, we try to approach all of them as if they have a soft tissue injury, because it's not, I never regret going too slow in rehab. I do regret going too fast. And I see a lot of those horses become pretty comfortable. And I think, you know, that's something that I've always tried, you know, over the last 10 years. And not saying that there aren't cases that won't get better, but in the sense of, I've always tried to give hope to owners that their horse may be able to get more comfortable, whether that's you know, some of them just want a happy retirement and some of them want to just hack and some of them want to be able to do more. And I'm just trying to get the word out more that that's not necessarily a career ending or life ending diagnosis, depending on how they came to it, I guess. And that's something that I found really encouraging about everything that you've put out about it, or that I've read that you've put out about it, is a similar approach of, like, you know, trying to make sure that we give the horse more of a benefit of the doubt that there might be something that can get them better.
Yeah, I mean, I won't even begin to try to make that diagnosis until the horse hasn't responded to any therapy for like 6 months.
Yeah.
I just say, look, the problem's in the foot. If you want to do more accurate imaging, you know, that's now available to us. We have MRI, now we have PET scans coming out. So there is more accurate imaging that will help you know. But the fact of the matter is that most of these soft tissue injuries are just going to take time. And if, as you say, give them plenty of time and just you're patient with them, a lot of these horses come around. The longest one that I can remember so far is I had a horse that blocked in the heel. He'd been diagnosed. He came to me as a second opinion. So I told him we're just going to have to wait it out. They waited 18 months, but the horse came sound.
Wow. Yeah. And it's funny because I went to England shortly after my horse was diagnosed because there was a facility out there that worked a lot with horses with, you know, caudal hoof pain. And they, a lot of them will just turn out their horses for like a year. And just, I mean, that's obviously kind of scary to do, to think, okay, we're just going to ignore it. But, and I'm not saying, I'm not putting this out there to tell people to do that. I'm just saying a lot of them do that and a lot of their horses come up sound. It's just like they just let them sit and then see how they do. Obviously, that's a little, I tend to be a little more proactive than that, but it kind of points to what you're saying is time can answer a lot of questions too.
But that's what we used to do, right? Horse is lame, turn him out, come back and look at him next year. I mean, you know, prior to all of the knowledge that we accumulated, that was a treatment. And the fact of the matter is that it worked on a lot of horses.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's the best thing for every horse, and there's certainly, you know, downsides to turning horses out with ligament injuries and that sort of stuff. You know, I think that controlled and supervised rehabilitation is generally a better idea than just kicking them out in the back 40. But, you know, the fact is we keep finding out that we don't know as much as we think we did. And so under such circumstances, I always think it's probably a good idea to be a little careful and proceed a little cautious and have a little optimism. And, you know, it's clear that, like I said, what we used to think was wrong.
Yeah. And I don't know if it was I'm trying to remember if it was your blog or if it was somewhere else that I read that a lot of horses get better whether we do something or not, you know, whether, you know, we do all the therapies and try to do every single injection and, you know, treatment plan. It kind of, you know, gave me a little bit of a perspective of those cases that we do everything for and they seem like they don't get better versus the cases that we do nothing and they seem to get better.
Oh, yeah. It's from a human perspective, it's hard to see a horse with an injury and not want to do something. But this is a question I asked in an article a few years back. Do you want to do something or do you want to do something that does something?
Yeah.
And so much of what we do, and that goes in terms of, you know, many of the machines, many of the supplements, even some of the medications, so much of what we do is just doing something. But while we're doing that something, time passes and the healing goes on. And so we tend to feel good and give ourselves a lot of, you know, pats on the back for our good intentions. But whether they actually do anything or not is a whole different question. And, you know, for horse owners, where the cost of care is certainly a reasonable issue, I think it's always a good thing to keep in mind that just because you do something doesn't mean the something you're doing is doing anything. The only thing that's guaranteed is the cost. And again, for people that are looking at trying to keep their horses within the means of a budget, sometimes it's better to kind of, as I tell people, there's the phrase, don't just stand there, do something. Well, the phrase works in reverse, too. You can say, don't just do something. Sometimes just stand there. and it'll be fine. So I just, because it's such a word, a diagnosis is laden with so many negative ideas and consequences, and because it's not something that we can be super confident with, I just think that it would behoove horse owners to kind of step back, and if you don't find anything that's immediately damning, say, well, let's just give this a little time. Let's be a little conservative and, you know, take it easy and let him rest and relax and see how he comes along.
Yeah. And I have, you know, I have a wrap-up question, but I was wondering, because I've read a few of your blog posts on bisphosphonates. I was wondering if you wanted to touch on those or talk about them or...
Oh, bisphosphonates? Yeah. So bisphosphonates have been shown to be safe in horses, mostly. You don't want, there's colic associated after giving them. There's, you don't want to put them into renal failure and give them lots of bisphosphonates along with non-steroidal drugs because they all go through the kidneys. And in racehorses, I think 10 years ago, it was felt that giving bisphosphonates routinely to young racehorses actually was associated with catastrophic fractures. But if you look at the initial research on them, it's not really very promising when you go through and parse it. And I wrote an article about that. Second thing is that the bisphosphonates that are being used in horses are really old drugs. They're several generations away from the more effective drugs that are being used in people for the treatment of like postmenopausal bone loss. It's a simple solution where, you know, your horse has a little change and he blocks out. So instead of rushing for the isoxazoline, we're rushing for the osphos. And I just think that it doesn't make medical sense. It makes kind of emotional sense that you understand you have a horse that you're worried about and you have a drug that has been approved for use in navicular disease. But again, if you look at the research behind it, it's not that impressive, nor would you expect it to be, because navicular disease is a deterioration of the bone, and this medication is not going to stop that, even in its most optimistic interpretations. It might, it might help decrease pain coming from the bone, but I certainly am not, I haven't been impressed with it clinically, and I bet I don't give a bottle a year. It's just not it's the kind of thing that has, a list of side effects that are, that could be a bit scary, and I'm not really impressed with the research, so I just don't use it much. I will say, listen, if you want to find out what it is, go spend some money on some diagnostics, get some imaging done, and then you have a much better idea what you're dealing with. And if not, just give it some time and see how things will come along. And most of the time, there's the old saw about time healing all wounds. Well, it doesn't heal all of them, but it sure gets a lot of them.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, that's even a great point of advice for owners. And that was sort of going to be my last question was, do you have any last advice for an owner of a horse that was recently diagnosed with navicular in terms of, what they should, and I think this whole episode kind of talks about how they should approach it, but anything else that you can tell them as last advice for what they should do after that diagnosis?
Well, a lot of it, to me, a lot of it just depends on how comfortable you are with uncertainty.
Yeah.
I'm personally really uncomfortable with uncertainty. I don't believe we have a lot of control over a lot of stuff. So I'm okay if somebody says, look, I can block your horse in the foot, and look, I've taken some x-rays. I don't see anything horrible here. So why don't we give it some time and see what happens? Well, there's some uncertainty with that, right? So if you don't like uncertainty, then try to pursue the most accurate diagnosis you can come up with, which is advanced imaging. It's also the most expensive diagnosis that you can come up with. But if you've got the money and you don't like uncertainty, I completely recommend that you do that. You may find that you have to wait it out anyway. which is fine. But if you're okay with uncertainty and you get a diagnosis like this, you know there's a lot of uncertainty in the diagnosis, we'll just see how it goes. And, you know, because the horse isn't going to be sulking, the horse is going to just go along, do the best you can anyway, and, you know, feed it and enjoy it in other ways, you know, and spend time with your horse and then check it every month or two and see how things are going. And you might be happily surprised down the road that things are getting better.
Yeah, absolutely. Is there anything that we didn't touch upon that you feel is important before we wrap up? Is there something that I didn't ask about that you'd want to talk about? Or,
you know, I think the big thing is that is to understand that we're all trying the best we can.
Yeah.
And we don't have all of the answers to everything. A diagnosis of navicular disease is not like a diagnosis of seeing that your horse has a cut on the side of his cheek. You know, when you see a horse with a cut on the side of his cheek, you know you got to go and clean it, anesthetize it, maybe sedate the horse a little bit, sew it up, and you know what to do, right? It's an obvious problem. This isn't an obvious problem. And when the horse does have a severe case of navicular disease, it's a problem that you probably can't do much about anyway, much like arthritis. If you have a severe case of arthritis, we don't have a cure for that. And in many ways, navicular disease is like arthritis. It's a degeneration of the bone. We don't have a cure for that. So in my mind, the best thing to do is to keep things in perspective, understand that the diagnostic and treatment processes are full of flaws. They're the best we can do now. And if you like your horse, give him the time, give him a chance. It's not a diagnosis to be made quickly, and it's not even a diagnosis that can be made very precisely in many cases. So, I mean, I guess the last thing, is there anything I didn't say? I'd say, for your listeners, if your horse gets a diagnosis of navicular disease, don't despair. just kind of go, well, let's see what we need to see, and maybe give it a little time and maybe look a little deeper. But just because somebody tells you something right off the bat doesn't mean you have to just, you know, feel like your horse is a wreck and be sad for the rest of your life.
Yeah. And I personally want to thank you, because honestly, I can't even imagine the thousands and thousands of people you've given hope to just with your blog and your navicular book. And it's something that I would definitely have not kept pursuing, you know, helping my horse, I don't think, if it weren't for those. So thank you so much for allowing your knowledge to be put out there to share with others. And I really appreciate that. And I'm sure there are so many others who do as well.
Aw, thank you. I mean, the whole reason I got into vet school is try to help horses. And I just, you know, that's kind of all I want to do. So if I can help some people in any way, shape, or form and help some horses, it just makes me happy.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it was so nice. I'm so glad that I was able to meet you last month and that you agreed to chat with me. And I really appreciate your time today, despite your already long morning. And thank you again. This is great.
Oh, you bet. I'm happy to help you at any time. Thanks for your efforts to help people and help horses too. And it's an absolute honor and to be on with you. And thanks for inviting me.
Of course.
All right. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Bye. Bye. I always say that I'm slightly more hoof obsessed than the average person. And chances are, if you're listening to a hoof care podcast, you are too. So we should probably be friends. Feel free to find me on Facebook or email me at thehumblehoof@gmail.com.